Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Real Estate Disruptors. Today, we've got Stephanie Betters, who with multiple companies, so I can't pick one specifically. And she's going to talk about how you can scale your business through systems, processes, and also being a nurse as well, which is kind of crazy. If this is your first time tuning in, I am Steve Trang, sales trainer for some of the top wholesalers in the country, and I'm on a mission to create 100 millionaires. Question I get all the time is, how do you become one of the 100 millionaires? The information on this podcast alone is enough for you to become a millionaire in the next 5 to 7 years. All you need to do is take consistent action and you will become one. When you hear a nugget, please type into the comments section and after the show, identify your single biggest takeaway and focus on just that for the next 7 days. If you get value today, please tag a friend below or share this episode right now. That way we can all grow together. And this is a live show, so please ask your questions for Stephanie to answer. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So first question is, what got you into real estate?
Okay. My husband is responsible for that. My husband, Zach. Mm-hmm. We met in college really, really young. I was 19 when I met him. We started dating. And when we graduated college, we had nothing. We had no money. We just had fresh degrees and no money. And he convinced me to buy a foreclosed house. This was in 2007. Right, great timing, right? And because that's what you do when you have no money, you get a fixer-upper and you live in it and you flip it. So that's what we did. And I tell him all the time, like, that was not what I imagined you carrying me over the threshold into this disaster of a house with water damage and mold and the whole thing.
Did you guys move into it?
We did, but thankfully we gutted it before we moved in. So we took care of the mold and then literally then we moved in.
So you guys were house hacking back in 07.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was the first one. So we lived in it. We flipped it. It took us about a year and a half, and we sold it literally at the peak. It was early 2009 when we sold it, and we were in Binghamton, New York, and literally 2 weeks after we sold it, the whole market there crashed. IBM was a big employee there. They laid everybody off. So we, just got through it with the nick of our teeth.
So fantastic timing.
Yes. So then we took all that money, we put it in a CD, and we went to grad school. And so Zach is a physician assistant. I'm a nurse practitioner. And after we graduated, we were trying to figure out what to do next. We were living on Long Island. It was really expensive to live there. Young professionals now. Charlotte, my daughter, was born. We're like, what do we do? And he's like, well, let's do the real estate thing again. That was good. We made money. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do it again, but I will never live in it again. So whatever we do, we've got to figure it out so we don't have to live in that. Because I had sheetrock dust PTSD. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So we looked, our family was all over the U.S. at that time, so we weren't married to a certain area. So we literally picked a place on the map. We looked at Charlotte. We did a little market analysis of that, compared it to Raleigh, compared it to Jacksonville. And we really felt that Charlotte had a great potential and it was kind of following those two markets. It was near an international airport, and it was warm enough that our parents would retire there. So we did it.
There was a lot of thought that went into where you guys are moving to.
Yep.
And I didn't hear anything about being a doctor or a nurse practitioner. So you guys were both going through medical schooling?
Yeah, we sold our house, went to grad school, mm-hmm. finished grad school, then started this.
Right. So you guys were studying for what exactly?
Yeah, medicine. Yeah.
So you guys were both studying for medicine, mm-hmm. and you guys went to Raleigh? No.
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Yep.
You went to Charlotte, and no part of your calculation was practicing medicine.
Well, it was definitely a good place to practice. That was part of it.
Okay.
There was the job market there for us was really good. So it's funny, that was secondary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went there and then you got right back into the real estate game.
Kind of. So what we decided to do was build a house. So this was my thing, and this comes up a lot for me in my story and still now, but fear is a big thing, right? We just made a huge investment in our careers. We had cumulatively over $200,000 in debt now. Even though we made $40,000, it was in a CD. We didn't count it. We had over $200,000 in student loan debt. So I was like, oh my God, we can't just abandon our careers at this point and just start a company. What are we going to do? We need to have some sort of plan. I need to have some sort of proof that this concept is going to work at scale. So we decided to build a house in a neighborhood we thought would appreciate. We're like, okay, this neighborhood looks really good. Let's do it. If we build the house and we move in and we get equity, if it gains value, we'll take a HELOC out and that's what we're going to use to start a business. Mm-hmm. So that took 2 years. So meanwhile, I had another baby. We're working. We're trying to pay off as much as we can. We're both working full time, just kind of learning as much as we can, reading, everything.
What were you guys doing?
listening to podcasts.
But I mean, like, what were you guys doing for money?
Oh, we were still working full time. So I was working as a CT surgery nurse practitioner. Zach's a PA in urgent care. So we were working full time doing that and like absorbing as much as we could about real estate. And then, so 2 years passes and I'm starting to feel a little more secure. Mm-hmm. We bought a rental and I was like, okay, that wasn't too scary. You know, we found a special program. We only had to put down 5% for that. So we bought a rental. I was like, oh, okay, I think we can do this. So then we got an appraisal on our house and we had like 30 grand in equity. So we took out 20. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, here we go. We got 20 grand. What are we going to do? And we started looking on MLS, and our first deal was actually from an MLS and simultaneously a HUD deal. So we got two at the same time. So one we kept as a rental and one we flipped with private money from, you know, colleagues in the hospital, which is great. You know, you're just kind of chatting about real estate while you're stitching someone up, you know? So that guy became a private money lender and he funded our flip. So we put a tenant in that house. That was great. And then we flipped that one, the other house, which is a little condo. And then we just kept taking that money and turning it. And then we started, after four deals like that, we started marketing, direct to seller marketing.
And what was those two deals you did? When was that exactly?
That was 2015.
Okay.
2015 and 2016.
So you guys were in grad school for like 4 years?
Three
years. Mm-hmm. And then you guys went down and started. Mm-hmm. Worked for a couple of years, built some equity, and then you guys decided to jump in.
Yep.
So you're not the crazy people that just jumps in.
Well, in 2007 we did. We just bought the house and tried to figure it out. But then after that, we were trying to be a little more calculated.
Got it. Okay.
But so 2015 is when we started it again.
And then you guys had success right off the bat.
Essentially, I mean, we definitely bumped our head a lot. We made a lot of mistakes with contractors, with repairs and things like that. But we were pretty good out of the gate. We made money.
And you guys were a husband and wife team, mm-hmm. in the beginning. So mm-hmm. you guys would both work. Well, I mean, do you even have a normal schedule in that?
No.
So you didn't have a normal schedule. Mm-mm. So then how were you guys able to balance work and life? And, well, I guess work, marriage, and another business.
It's really hard. It was really hard. I mean, we worked all the time. We put the kids to bed and we worked till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning every day.
Got it. What, you know, a lot of people that are jumping into this are predominantly single with a spouse that may or may not be supportive.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of the challenge as an entrepreneur. How is it joining or starting a business together as a married couple with kids?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. It's really hard. I was not on board at first, right? Like I had all my own fears I had to deal with, and he had to be like patient with that, yet also inspire me too, you mm-hmm. know? So it's funny. I think as vision, so I'm not a visionary. He's a visionary. I'm very much a COO type.
I'm really surprised because I'm looking at all the accomplishments. You do not seem like someone that needs to be dragged along.
Well, I did at first. Then I got like addicted. Now he created a monster.
Right.
But, so I think the job of the visionary, you know, we say you want to start the company, you want to be CEO, you need to inspire your employees to follow you. But I really believe that the first person you should inspire or you have to inspire is your spouse, mm-hmm. if you're married. Like
right.
you've got to, like they've got to see your vision. So that took me a bit to see it. And then once I saw it, I was like, I believe we can do it. I believe you can do it. I think mm-hmm. we can do this together, you know. But it took me a minute. I had to deal with my own stuff and I had to talk about what I was afraid of and how do I overcome that, you know. And I have my own personal baggage like we all do, you know. My parents actually were both entrepreneurs. And I'm the firstborn American in my family. My parents were both immigrants. And
from where?
Norway and Italy. And they were like, no, you go get an education. Right? So I was like, I don't want to throw my education away.
That was my parents.
Right? Yeah. So you have to deal with that. They just want you to go get educated and they don't want you to risk it. Mm-hmm. So we had all this like trash from everybody else. And although my parents are super supportive, they still have that, even though they don't mean to be. Mm-hmm. They're like, don't risk it. No, my gosh, do the safe thing, you know.
They're looking out for your best interests.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So what were your fears in starting?
Losing it. Balance.
Losing the business or losing, like, because your career was kind of fixed.
Losing, like, money.
Got it.
That was really scary because we didn't have any margin. We had a ton of debt. Mm. So it's like, what if we take this little bit of margin we have and we lose it all? What if we make a big mistake? What if we get sued? Like, what if the roof, what if we don't do it right? And like, a, you know, contractor comes back.
Sounds like conversations with my wife.
Oh my gosh. I'm telling you, I was more stressed dealing with that than dealing with people literally dying, bleeding to death at the hospital. Like contractors were more stressful to me than that. That's how bad it was.
So we were talking earlier, bantering before the show, and you were mentioning like you were kind of nervous. It's like, well, no one's ever died on podcast, right? Yeah. But you've actually had to deal with that.
Yeah.
In the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And with all that stress, pressure,
mm-hmm.
dealing with contractors is more stressful.
Yeah. Now it's not. But then, yes, absolutely. Because it was unknown. I wasn't educated for that. Yeah. You know, you're kind of learning as you're going. That was different from what I was experienced before. You read a book, you go to a lecture, you learn, and then you apply it. And for this, it was like all at the same time. So right. It took some adjusting for me, you know, to get used to that. But then once you figure out that no one's going to die, mm-hmm. that the worst isn't going to happen, you're like, okay, I can move with this.
Yeah. So then you get a handful of deals.
Yep.
And in this situation, he was the visionary, you were the integrator.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was your first hire?
Lead manager.
Okay.
Answer the phone. That was a big pain point for us. So what happened was we started marketing and we were doing our own flips and I didn't know what wholesaling was. Like we read something about that on Bigger Pockets. We're like, we're not doing that. We're going to flip. But then we started marketing. We started getting deals that we couldn't close or our contractors were busy. So we're like, well, what do we do now? You know, like we can't make a promise to this homeowner and then not deliver. So we had some other investor friends that we met in the area and we wholesaled a deal. I think our first wholesale, we made like $8,000. And I was like, that was good. Let's do some more of that.
Right.
And then, so then the phone keeps ringing, right? And we keep marketing. And I'm trying to answer the phone with like crying babies in the background. Like it was super stressful. So we hired that because it was the major stress point for us is how do we answer live? How do we deal with this? So that's when Rain joined us. And he's still with us, actually.
And when was that?
2016.
Okay. So a lot of employee loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good.
Yeah.
So he saw that pain point. Was it also because you guys were working full time still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's just a lot of leads kind of falling through the cracks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So when did you guys scale your operation?
Shortly after that first hire. So I want to say the end of 2016. We really increased a ton of marketing spend. And we did, I think, 11 deals in 2016. And then in 2017, we did, I want to say, more than 50. And then we kind of stuck at 50 up until last year. We did 200.
Okay. That's a big jump.
Big jump.
What were the keys to a big jump like that? Because I think a lot of people are stuck, mm-hmm. even just, you know, a deal every other month or maybe mm-hmm. one or two deals a month. Like, there's that window.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest challenge, I think, in that area is either your CRM or the right people.
Mm-hmm.
So what were the biggest things that helped you jump from 50 to 200?
Addressing those problems right away, like both of them. They were both huge problems for us. Hiring is huge. This is kind of where, like, I became addicted to business, right? Because once I realized that I can do more with help, I did more. And more of my, like a whole another room in my brain opened up and I was like, oh, this interest, this little thing I had an idea about or wanted to have time to further develop, I could never do it. So it was like nagging in the back mm-hmm. of my brain. As soon as I released some of the tasks I had to do to somebody else and they did them well, like I was afraid, what if they ruin it? What if they drop the ball? What if blah, 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 all the what ifs. And when that didn't happen, and it was okay, then I had the time to develop these other thoughts, and then other things were born from them, mm. you know? So I felt like I could just do so much more. I could reach more homeowners. I could think about new marketing channels. You know, I could train more people, et cetera. So hiring was huge, huge, huge. But I had to figure out what I needed first. And again, we didn't have a playbook. I didn't know who to hire. I don't know what positions a company needed, you know? So we kind of just bang some rocks together and try to figure out what the pipeline that the lead comes in and the deal, like how does it work, right? And then we joined some groups and some masterminds and we felt, okay, now this is a thing. Like mm-hmm. there are people who are doing this, so let's replicate some of the things that they are doing. And we kind of had a plan moving forward on how to hire. And then a huge problem became data. Our CRM was awful. I couldn't figure out things. I couldn't predict anything. And you know my personality profile now, and like mm-hmm. I'm the COO type. I wanted to be able to interpret data and then make a decision. And I kept coming back to that as an issue. Like, I don't know what I should do next because I don't know what's happened. I don't understand why this lead didn't convert or how many leads I actually need to generate or how I should spend my money that I'm making on marketing. I just didn't know what to do. So we kept we kept looking for a solution for a CRM, and there wasn't one. And then eventually I got really mad. Like, I'm not even, like, I snapped. I get really angry sometimes. I'm a very passionate person, you know.
At Zach, at the team, at yourself.
I just, at everybody. I was so mad that there wasn't a solution for data that I just made one myself.
Got it.
And then we launched it for our company.
So when was that exactly?
That was in 2019.
Okay. And it's in Salesforce.
Yep.
Which is not cheap.
Nope.
Generally speaking.
Nope.
So what kind of investment was that as far as time, you know, as far as hours goes?
Yep.
And financial?
Yep. So you can either spend money or you can spend time, right? We were in a position where I didn't feel comfortable going forward with a quote that Salesforce developers gave us, which was like upper hundred thousands of dollars. Like, and that was for phase one, right? So like, you know, it's going to be 500 by the time you're done with this thing.
Yeah.
So that's really what made me the most angry. I was like, what? How is it that's this much money? And I'm so desperate for a solution. So I decided to do it. And I spent the next, after that decision was made, and I like snapped on this Zoom call with like all these people. And like, it really wasn't pretty. The next 200 hours, I just built Salesforce. I figured out how to code on it. I taught myself. I watched videos from like 2000 because all the new Salesforce training videos are several thousand dollars each. If you want to do like a developer course, you have to take like six, and they're all $2,000 to $3,000. I'm like, this is like grad school. This is crazy. I'm not doing this. So I bought an old course and taught myself, and then just messed with it for 200 hours and got it to a place where it was good enough that we could launch it for our business. So we launched, and then I probably spent another 50 to 100 hours tweaking it and like making things a little better once it was live. And then it like coasted. It was awesome. The whole team like adapted to it really well. And I still tweak it here and there. I'm still trying stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we're building out like a project management side of it too now. But it was amazing. I spent $150 a user to do it, but I didn't pay a developer.
So that's crazy because it's not simple to just get in there and just start banging things out.
No.
And so you're the second person in a row. So because Darren was on the call show last week.
Oh yeah.
And he went in there and he's like, whatever, and he just kind of made it happen.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I guess if you know what you want, you're willing to go. What's the word? Go all out.
That's right.
To make it work.
Yeah.
So you did all left main yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Let's take a step back. You mentioned that you were joined a couple of masterminds, and that kind of helped you open your mind a little bit.
Yeah.
What was the first mastermind you joined?
Seven Figure Flipping.
Got it.
Justin Williams was running at that point. Now it's Bill Allen.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. A great group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And Bigger Pockets was a big part of that too. And then I joined CG, Collective Genius.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So like, Darren kind of shared with me, you know, like for a minute, you know, he was like the hot chick, right? Like everyone loved Darren. And he's like, he kind of said to me kind of like, you know, joking, I was like, well, thanks a lot, Steve. Like I was like the cool kid and now you're the cool kid. And now I'm sharing with him. I was like, well, maybe it was us for a little bit, but now it's Stephanie, right? You're coming in with the CRM. And so, you know, one of the reasons why I never got into Salesforce, you know, because I recognize that it is the most powerful, right? There's a reason why it's the 800-pound gorilla in the industry.
Exactly.
Right? And I did the Infusionsoft thing, and I've done some other things.
Yeah.
But I always avoided Salesforce
mm-hmm.
because it's prohibitively expensive.
Exactly.
And my wife is an actual admin, right? Like she's gone through the certification. I don't know how many badges she's gotten, but she's got a lot of badges, right?
Yeah.
And so I know what they sell it for and what they pay for. I was like, I will never do this.
Right.
Then I was talking to Dan Bro, and he was like, well, you need to check out this left main thing or the Salesforce thing. I was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I wasn't prepared to drop like 20,000,
mm-hmm.
right. To sign up. And then we were talking. It's like, no, there's no way. He's like, it's $5,000. I was like, there's no way. There's no way. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And so, but then there was a thread that was started within the CG Facebook group.
Yeah.
And they're all talking about it. And then like, you know, Darren's like, you guys need to sign up for it. And then there are a couple other people. And, I had conversations with Phil Green.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were building out their own Salesforce.
Yeah.
I've had conversations with Scott Utz because they're building out their own Salesforce.
Yeah.
And when they both said, ah, screw it, we're just going to go with Stephanie. It's like, they've told me personally how much they invested.
I know.
Right?
I know.
And they're like, we're scrapping that. We're going over. And so I was talking to Eric Gideson, who's Phil's right-hand man.
Right.
He's like, are you signing up for it? And my response, and this is, you know, a lot of stereotypes involved here, I was like, of course I sign up for it. You know, like, if nothing else, like, the Asian in me just loves a good deal. I just love a good deal. So when I saw it was $5,000, like, it was like a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I'm really impressed that you did that on your own. I assumed that you were managing developers this whole time.
No.
So the other thing I want to give credit to, because, and I don't know the exact words, but, you know, Audantic is auditing all our data.
Yeah.
Right? And so Ryan, who's our integrator, was on the call, and he mentioned that you had the best conversion rate as far as, you know, the fewest pukers, I guess, of everybody. So yeah. To me, I was like, well, if Audantic's saying that, then really glad we signed up for a CRM.
That's really cool. Yeah.
So you got your team. You're doing 200 deals a year in one market?
One market, Charlotte.
And what is your primary marketing platform for that?
Well, we have two primary. Online is one, the number one. And we have a couple.
Pay-per-click?
Yep, pay-per-click. We also do some of the like Need to Sell My House Fast and some of the other people who are selling PPC leads, essentially. Facebook is huge.
Yeah.
And then we do some niche mailing, really small lists, like 100 letters a month, like very, very small. SEO, referral stuff, deal with some wholesalers for new builds, because we buy land and buy and build new spec homes.
Oh, you do? Mm-hmm. You're a developer as well?
Yeah.
Wow.
We do wholesale and we new build.
What does it take to qualify to be on the 100 letters a month list?
You have to have gotten an auction date on your house.
Okay.
So not pre-foreclosure, but foreclosure that you're assigned an auction date.
All right. So this is happening. It's not like, hey, you default. Hey, get your stuff together. Right. It's like, hey, by the way, we're taking your house.
Yep. So we open up that line like, hey, Mr. Seller, this is Stephanie with Better Path Homes. I got a notice across my desk here that looks like the bank is trying to take your house. Mm-hmm. What's going on here? You know, this is something that we can help you with potentially. That way you can get you don't lose your equity.
Right.
And people are like, oh yeah, I know. I just had my court date with the judge. I just gave me a date. I'm like, yeah, it looks like it's in 30 days.
Is that how fast it is over there?
Mm-hmm. After they get assigned that date, so it can be years up until they get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always alarmed by how long people can go without paying. It's crazy. And then, of course, like, I sweat it, right? I want to be paying everything on time. And then people, like, don't pay their mortgage for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But so it can be a long time before they physically get to the courthouse and get assigned a date. But when they get assigned a date, it's almost always 30 days later. COVID made it a little bit tricky, but it's generally 30 days later.
Yeah, it's fascinating because over here, for the most part, now, right, not during the crisis many years ago, but for the most part now, if you're late 3 months, you're getting foreclosed on.
Yeah.
And it's in 3 months.
Yeah.
Right. And for us, the greatest challenge is for the first 90 days, for the first 60 out of those 90 days, they're like, I've got time.
Right, exactly.
Right. And by that time, they've been harassed nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in some ways, it's kind of, you know, a plus as an investor. Like, once that date hits, you got 30 days.
Exactly. And they know it's real. And even still, though, people will be in denial. Oh, yeah. No, yeah.
So what are you doing to get them out of that denial?
We just get to them in person, or we get them with a sales conversation. We just dig in a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And we get them to start pulling out some paperwork and starting to look at numbers. And I'll tell you, when you start getting people to open up their mail and look at what it says, then they're like, oh, it's real. I can't tell you how many times sellers just don't even open their mail anymore from the bank or from the courthouse even. Well, they're just,
it's better to not know.
Exactly.
At least they think it is.
Right. So if you can get them to start talking about it and start opening up their mail, they generally come around. And they're like, oh, crap.
Like you're on the phone with them? It's like, hey, why don't you go open up your
mailbox?
Yeah,
or we do this in person.
Got it.
Be like, okay, this is really important. I want to make sure we don't miss anything. Where's that letter you got from the county clerk's office?
So you got a bit of the visual. And you got a bit of the kinesthetic. They're touching it. They can hold this notice.
And it says there how much is past due and how much they need to pay to catch it up. And it's a big number. Yeah. You know, it's like,
well, if it takes 2 years to get to that point.
Right. It depends on how long it's been. But, I mean, it can be 10, 15, or maybe 5 even. And people can't come up with that, you know.
So over here in Arizona, right, if someone gets foreclosed on, there's excess proceeds. And that's supposed to go to the homeowner. The lawyer is going to take their money out of that. But.
Yep.
Supposed to go to there. Is it different in Carolina? Because I see a lot of people talking about excess proceeds programs.
Yes.
Does it not just automatically go to a homeowner in Carolina?
It doesn't. You have to apply for it. You have to essentially not sue for it, but you have to submit a complaint to get that proceeds back. So that means you have to monitor the situation, know that there was excess proceeds, and then apply for it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's very different than what we got going on over here.
Yeah. As far as I know, anyway.
So 200 deals a year. What does your organization look like right now?
We have, I think 12 employees. We have a CEO, who's my husband, a COO, who is Matt. I hired myself out of that position in 2020, which is very exciting. That's a big goal.
Yeah, congratulations.
So I don't sit in any seats over there anymore. Well, technically, I'm in the technology officer seat. Mm-hmm. And then we have a lead intake team, an acquisition team, a transaction coordination, dispositions, finance, and marketing.
Got it.
And every department is about 2 people deep. Depends.
So stepping out of the COO role,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of like a lot of our dreams, right? Like, we start this to have time freedom and financial freedom.
Yeah.
But then you get into it and it's a lot harder than they make it look on social media.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were able to step out of it. What were the things you had to do to be able to step out of it?
Well, first, we had to fully develop the universe that this was going to be. And I think that's something that we kind of take for granted as entrepreneurs, is that normal people don't think like that. Like, mm-hmm. you can kind of imagine which world you're in, and you're like, yeah, just do it. You're in this world. But people who enter your company, they don't know where you want to go. So having a really clear vision and then strategy to execute on that vision is really important. And then putting at least those pieces into place, like your marketing channels, your hires, at least defining what a department is or job descriptions are, you kind of have to materialize this company first,
mm-hmm.
and really articulate where it is that you want this thing to go, and then hire people that are appropriate for those seats that do better than you would have done in it. And then you have to coach them along to do that. Like, you can't just hire and be like, peace out. Like, you have to be there.
That's the dream.
I know, right? But it doesn't work that way, because then everything crumples. So you have to be there to organize it, and then to make sure that there's accountability, and that the people you hire have leadership skills so they can lead other people,
mm-hmm.
and that they can kind of pass, you know, you can pass a baton and they can carry it. So that takes some time, and that's really hard to articulate. But putting together what you want, like your vision planning and then your strategy, mm-hmm. is really important. And then you have to find the right person to take over your seat. So for us, Matt, our COO, was our project manager department chair. So he ran all of our rehabs, all of our new builds, and he had people underneath him. So we chose him because we trusted him. We've worked with him for years. He was actually our agent before we ever employed him directly. And he did a really good job of managing that department and affecting the bottom line, which is what we need as a COO.
Right.
Like, you got to show me you can move the bottom line number,
mm-hmm.
and you can keep it together. So he over the course of a year or so, we saw him develop out that department himself, improve numbers, improve efficiencies, and he wanted to put his hat in the ring for the COO. So I was like, let's interview him.
Very cool.
Yep. So then we hired him, and then I trained him for a year. And then I left in 2020.
So you're not involved in the day-to-day.
Mm-mm.
But Nick still is.
Zach, yes.
Zach still is.
Yep.
So how involved is he on the day-to-day?
So he runs the acquisition department right now on top of being the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of vacillated there a little bit. The acquisition department will be good, and then it'll require more attention. It's just like, you know, it's funny. That's our department that definitely has had the most churn.
Mm-hmm.
But now people that are in there, the average length that people have been with us there is about a year,
mm-hmm.
which is a long time.
For sales.
Yeah, for sales it's pretty good. I think it's just about a year is the average between all those people. So he just hired somebody that I think can ascend into the department chair role.
Awesome.
And then he can be more just in the CEO seat. But that's the one seat that he gets pulled into quite a bit.
It's tough. That's the managing salespeople. I was on a call yesterday, and it was with Eli Fisher and Chris Richter
for
the Authentic, the Funnel Welder Challenge.
Yeah.
And Chris was asking me, like, what's the most difficult thing? It's like, it's been the same in every company. It's people.
Yeah.
It's always the people is the hardest thing. And then within that subset, the salespeople.
I know.
Right?
We call them diva butterflies. And we love them, but they're diva butterflies. No detail. Where am I going? Where's the deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you stepped out of that. And mm-hmm. then you joined Gary Harper. Well, what was the next step?
Yeah. So that's funny. So I met Gary in 2018 when he helped us merge. So we merged with a third partner in 2018, Jeff Johnson, who's awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, all the core values are aligned. The vision is aligned. He's awesome. And so we met Gary then to help us make sure we merged appropriately. So we're like, hey, we really like each other. Let's not mess this up.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped us with just like vision planning too. Now that we had two visionaries come in, and like, how do we do that? So he taught me a lot about systems and processes. Like, I thought I had some understanding, mm-hmm. and I was like, whoa, a non-biased person coming in and like telling you some of this stuff was invaluable. So I met him then. We became really good friends. And the goal at that point was like, Gary, I need to retire. I need to be in the owner's box.
I can't retire.
Right. It's a farce, right? I'm too young to retire.
Yeah.
But that was the goal. I was like, I need to be in the owner's box. I don't want to leave medicine. I was still working full time until really recently, about a year and a half ago is when I went part time. So I was like, I can't give up medicine. What do I do? And I need to get out of the seat. So we did. So we accomplished that in January 2020. We mm-hmm. hired Matt. That was like his first time. We started that the year of 2020. What a great year to start as a new COO, right?
Right.
it turns out it was fine. But anyway, so when that happened and we accomplished it, he's like, well, what are you going to do now? You just going to go eat bonbons? Do you want to come like hang out with me? And I was like, well, what do you want me to do? And he's like, well, what if you come in and you help other COOs? And what if we talk, what if you get to be like a strategist with other companies and kind of, you know, and help us out? And I was like, that sounds fun. So then I started working with them. Yeah. And then simultaneously launched Left Main.
So what does that structure look like? I mean, is this Gary's baby and like you're just kind of talking to people, or you're selling people into the program? Like, what is your responsibility?
Yeah.
Within Sharper, I don't know which one is it.
Sharper Business.
There you go.
So I'm the chief growth officer.
Okay.
So what that means is I analyze people who are interested in hiring a business coach and make sure that we can help them grow, right? Like, are you established enough, or do you have enough of at least a foundation that we can help you?
Yeah.
And okay, what do you need to grow? I feel like if there's something I'm good at growth, right? Like, if you give me an idea, I can do something with it. But I need that vision too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I look at those potential clients and make sure there's something that we can do here to add value. And then after that, so essentially it's kind of like a sales position, but it doesn't really feel that way, honestly.
No, you didn't sell me.
Yeah. It doesn't feel that way.
No, when I had that call with you, I was like, this is what I want to do. You're like,
yeah.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, right?
But I think probably the people that are scheduling that call are already drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then sometimes we're not the right fit, or sometimes power days aren't the right way to start. Maybe we need to start here first and then grow to that. So there's a lot, I mean, Sharper does a lot of different things. So yeah. I just try to direct them in the right place if we're the right fit. And then besides that, I do COO training, and I run people's quarterly meetings and do some annual planning, and I do strategy sessions with companies, and kind of handpicked, you know, I only do a little bit of that because I kind of can.
Right.
You know? And it's cool because then I get to work with people I have chemistry with. And I think that's been really important too.
How much time commitment is that?
Probably like 5 to 5 hours a week.
Got it.
Depends. If I'm running a quarterly meeting, like, you know, the change of quarters, I'll do 2 or 3 quarterlies in that week span just because it's a new quarter. But that's really out of the ordinary.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then Left Main.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know Left Main was going to do what it's done?
No.
Okay. What was your initial projection for Left Main?
So first of all, that was never even on the horizon. My Salesforce account manager told me to do it. You know, when I showed them what I built, she was like, this is something. And I was like, no, it's not. It's okay. She's like, no, this is something. You need to do something with this. She's like, we don't have anything for the real estate industry that's good on Salesforce, like at all. Like, that whole vertical is a big empty hole. And she said that constantly Salesforce executives are talking about the real estate space on Salesforce and how it's underserved. So she's like, you need to do something. I'm like, well, what does that mean? You know, I don't know what that means. She's like, oh, it's like an app, just like iTunes. You make an app. And we test it, we try to break it, and if you pass, then you can launch and you can sell it. So I was like, well, okay, let me think about that. So I thought about it. I talked to Zach. Zach's like, I don't think you should do that. He's like, I don't think you're going to make any money at all. I think that it's going to be way too much work, and it's people are pains in the butts, and it's not going to be worth it.
That last part, or the second last part, people being pains in the butt, is definitely true.
Yeah, and you know, he's like, how many people are going to switch your CRM? Like, how, you know. So, and I took that to heart. I was like, I want to make sure I do this right, because I'm not here to then, you know, kill myself again. I just killed myself and got out of that, you know? And for me, I'm a workhorse. Like, I will work, right? Like, that's, but I will hurt myself. So he's great because he protects me from that too. Because when I get an idea in my head, I can't stop. So what I decided to do was to go through the whole app process, because I didn't even know if I would pass. I coded this thing myself. I was like, let me see if it even passes their security review. And I'll go through the steps and I'll go through the contract thing. So I did. It passed. It was awesome. It launched in January 2020, right after New Year's, like literally that next year, the next day after New Year's, whatever the next business day was. And then I told some of my friends about it. I was like, this is what I'm cooking. They saw my Salesforce and they're like, yeah, this is cool. I want to try it. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, let's try it. I'll put it in your org and let's do it. So I did like a little beta test with two people and they flipped out. Mm-hmm. They loved it. And I was like, oh, you like it? They're like, yeah, no, this is really cool. And I was like, okay, well, maybe we should let other people try it. And then they kind of told people, and there was this kind of this organic thing. And it didn't really hit me until like Q4 last year. Mm-hmm. When I had, I don't know, I probably had like 20 businesses on there and they were all like, this is really great. This has really helped me. They all had growth. They all felt like they had better data clarity. They felt like it really impacted their business. I'm like, this is really awesome. Like, are you advertising this? And I was like, well, no. Like, why aren't you advertising this? And I don't know why I was scared, but I cared so much. And I care so much. I'm like, this is like my baby. Mm. What if someone says my baby's ugly? You know, I can't, I don't know if I can handle it, you know? But thankfully, when you're around the right people, they encourage you, mm-hmm. right? And I'm very grateful for a really awesome network. So I was taught, we had this accountability group, and I was, you know, we did this weekly thing, and everyone on that call, there was five other people, and they're like, you're acting dumb. You need to talk about it. So this was September. So I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to do it. I'm going to launch it. I'm going to do it. Like, pump myself up. I'm going to do it. And I started marketing it in October 2020. And then it literally like exploded.
Yeah. It caught fire.
Absolutely did. And I'm so humbled by it. And then I'm so excited at the prospect of helping the industry. Mm-hmm. And like after I've seen what's happened now, like I'm coming for the whole thing.
Right.
Like the whole industry. I'm coming for like all of real estate investment. Mm-hmm. And like I know people are on Podio. Like I have a thing for like against Podio. Like it almost broke my soul. And
what is your thing against Podio?
I just think it's not serving our industry the way it should, mm-hmm. right? I think the tools that we have out there right now available to us as real estate investors who are trying to run multi-million dollar businesses, the tools that we're using are embarrassing.
It's pretty strong words.
I know.
What's embarrassing about them?
It's embarrassing because they're clunky. They don't integrate well. They don't automate well. And it doesn't give us the clarity and the data access that we need in an easy way that we're able to make decisions, right? Like, I want to be able to look at my CRM and have it help me instead of fight with it.
Yeah.
I want to pull a report up and know what's happened and then be like, okay, what's this percent conversion? Like, maybe I turn this dial, turn that dial. It's supposed to give me something. It's not just me inputting leads into, right? And then, like, trying to sort through and find them. It's supposed to make me better. It's supposed to make our employees better. And it's supposed to make me a better executive. So the ones that are, I think, that are out there in the industry right now are just really, they're difficult to do that.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, I will say, I will take a little step back and say that there are people who are ready, who need that, right? There's a butt for every seat. Mm-hmm. When you're first starting and you need something other than a post-it note, you got to start somewhere. So I have no qualms with that. But I think if you want to scale, there's nothing in there for us.
Yeah. Well, especially at this price point. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think, I've said this to you multiple times, and I'm sure you've heard this actually from a bunch of other people. You're priced too low.
I know, but I'm doing that on purpose.
Yeah. So what's that purpose?
Because I want the industry.
Yeah.
I think that the way Salesforce, I mean, they're a huge gorilla, right? Like, mm-hmm. and like they're the host of my app, so you can't be too negative about it. But they've been too aggressive, in my opinion, with price. Mm-hmm. That they've outpriced our industry, just like you said. So they've, the way the developers, a traditional developer has approached our industry, I think has failed us.
Yeah.
So what I really wanted to do was bring something that's affordable out to our industry so that people can actually use it and grow their business. And the idea here is a volume play for me. Like I don't make money until I have 1,000 users.
Yeah.
Right. Like you make a little bit, but I don't take a salary until that happens. So it's a long game for me. I'm almost there, well over halfway there. Which is awesome to have that happen so quickly, but that's the play. The play here is like all time. Like I want the lot.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to just sell 3-4 and be like, oh, that was fun. I really want to help. I want to impact the industry.
So you know, we're talking about Salesforce and overpricing. Yeah. I have a friend, very successful, super successful, and she was looking at, you know, building out this project.
Yeah.
You know, and the quote came back, and she's successful, and she's got the money. She can afford it,
yeah,
right? But the quote came back. It was $150K
yeah,
for phase one.
Yeah.
And she was looking, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So she's like, just dumped it on my wife's plate. Like, here you go. Yeah. You're doing it, right? Because it was just so cost prohibitive.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The industry, or the 800-pound gorilla, has a very interesting pricing strategy.
Yeah.
It's tough to for someone to get into it. And, I mean, I did the Infusionsoft thing, and that was, I think, as like a marketer or whatever, like, there are people that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But very few people have the margins to justify spending that on a CRM.
Exactly. And it's been this thing like, oh, you only use Salesforce if you're a big company. Mm-hmm. No. Well, our industry is 10 people or less. In general, the average real estate investment company is less than 10 employees.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing, you know, millions of dollars a year, right? But right. So you don't have to be a big company anymore. That was the idea. Like, let's serve the industry. And if you don't use Left Main, I hope that it inspires all the other platforms out there to be better.
Yeah.
You know, rising tide, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So I'm hoping, of course, I hope everybody uses Left Main, but I really want to see better tools for us in our industry.
Yeah. And then someone here was asking about Plecto, and this is thing I really like.
Yeah.
Is that it already has an interface.
Yeah.
You don't need a Plecto. You don't need a Podio to go into Plecto. Salesforce and your exactly. Salesforce is already there.
Exactly.
So let's change the topic here.
Yeah.
You're a nurse practitioner.
Yes.
Still.
Yes.
What is wrong with you?
I know. Everyone asks me this all the time. You're going to make me blush. This is a big part of who I am, mm-hmm. and what I think I'm supposed to do. And I struggle a lot with this. What am I supposed to do? What do I do with my skills? What does God want me to do with my skills? What am I here for,
mm-hmm.
right? And it always comes back to me feeling like I'm supposed to still do it. And I don't really have a good reason other than that I just feel like I'm supposed to. It's a burden, and sometimes, you know, like, I'm tired, right? When mm-hmm. when I have my 4 days in a row that I'm on call for 4 days and rounding for 4 days, and, you know, I don't sleep for 72 hours, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? That's the worst return on my time invested, by the way. Like, I make a fraction of what I make at the hospital is what I make in everything else. Like, it's literally the worst return on investment. But there's something else there, mm-hmm. you know? And things really changed as far as my perspective when I show up there at the hospital and I'm taking care of people. My perspective changed when I didn't have to be there anymore. I'm like, I want to be here, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm choosing to be here. And then it becomes so much more rewarding. It was already rewarding, but then there's like an extra depth to it,
mm-hmm.
where you feel like what you're doing is really meaningful.
It's not charity, but in a way, it's charitable with your time.
Yeah.
Right. And I see this, I think it's Scott Myers, right? I mean, they go down to Central America or South America,
mm-hmm.
and they're building houses.
Yeah.
Right. And they're just flying out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think spending is like a week just building houses in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I think if that's your contribution, if you feel like it's fulfilling,
mm-hmm.
then I think you should keep doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So long as it's fulfilling.
It is. It's extremely fulfilling.
Yeah.
I love being there. I love my patients. I love my practice. And I get my cup filled when I'm there. And it sounds kind of dumb to say, but it's actually relaxing. It seems silly, but, like, you know what? To show up and, like, do your job, mm-hmm. instead of showing up to create the job, mm-hmm. it's totally different. Like, it feels good sometimes just, like, I'm here to do my thing. And, like, I don't have to worry about, like, the big picture. I don't have to worry about carrying the weight of everyone's problems on me right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to control what I can control. Science is fun. Science is predictable. I'm like, hey, if I do this, this happens. Yes. Yeah. That's logical. That's nice.
I can say for me, I don't do this a lot, but, you know, playing sports.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're just in the moment. You're present. There's no, there's no stress. It's like, what did this person say? How do we manage this? This mm-hmm. person is doing a challenge. You know, there's no people element. There's no thinking in the future. There's no how am I paying that bill? Like, there's just literally no other noise except just you in your environment. So
right. You're
feeling like that's kind of...
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Therapeutic.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I keep showing up.
That's awesome. All right. Let's see if we had any other questions here. Sean Foster says he truly hates his Podio. Sean, we've talked about this. It's the reason why we made the switch. And Chaim says you're awesome. So I guess you know Chaim.
I do. Hey, Chaim.
Chaim's a fantastic, fantastic human being.
He is. He's one of my favorite human beings. He's in Israel right now, right?
Yeah,
like, what time is it over there right now?
I don't think he has a choice, though. all right, so we kind of touched on it a little bit, but let's see. Well, let me answer Raylan's question first. Raylan, we made the switch to Salesforce some time ago, so that's already happened. Ben wants to know, all right, so specifically, in your opinion, why is Salesforce better important? I know you kind of talked about, like, you got the dashboard, you kind of see it. High level, you already know what's going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, two or three, like, big things why someone that's using Podio that can afford to make the leap, right? Not if you're still grinding, but if you can afford to make the leap, why should someone make the jump?
So the platform stability, number one, this was a big driver for me. The platform itself and the way Salesforce is coded and built on the Sales Cloud is incredibly stable. It doesn't go down, and it's constantly being backed up. So it's very, very stable for all users, no matter where you are in the world. It's, in fact, it's made for that, right? That was a huge reason for me, because my Podio went down, right? That's kind of like what this whole cascade happened. Is Podio went down.
That's how you snapped on Zoom.
That's why I went to say, I was like, what's the number one CRM in the world? I don't even care anymore. What is it? Because Podio went down, and I was like, my hands were tied for 3 days, mm-hmm. and I didn't have any backup. It was just a nightmare.
I think there was like a nationwide real estate investor panic.
Right? Remember when that happened?
Yeah. It was all over the Facebook groups.
I don't even know how much money I lost. Yeah. Who even knows at this point? But the phone couldn't. It was horrific. So stability was a really, really big thing for me. And then I wanted to be able to create something without limitation. And Salesforce is really set up that way. If you can think about it, it can be done. It can be integrated with, like, everything plays in the sandbox with Podio. You don't have to have, you know, some complex globally flow freaking, you know, jerry-rigged integration. Like, it just does. It plays directly with it. And you can build essentially anything you can imagine on it. So I really, really like that versatility that it has. And then on top of that, it can handle big data. So it can grow with you forever. So I think you hit your max at 1 million records per object. So, like, we have a lead object, for example. If you have a million records in there, million leads, now you have to buy, like, an expansion pack, right? Mm-hmm. Like you do on Google Drive if you, like, you get another terabyte.
Your Gmail's too full, yeah.
Exactly, right. So it can handle a lot of data, and then it can process that data pretty quickly. So you can put all your stuff in there and then essentially extrapolate it into really, really cool reports and, like, cross-examine different scenarios. So, like, you can cross over. Like, for example, we have a QuickBooks integration. I can directly marry that QuickBooks integration in. I can tell you, like, live, minute to minute, how much that lead cost me to how much that opportunity, that appointment, that deal cost me. So when you take an integration in, you can, like, weave it into your actual org so you can get all that data out. And, mm-hmm. and the reports are nice enough that, like, you can make it so it means something. So it's not like a spreadsheet or you're scrolling down or that you've, like, somehow parsed over. And it's accurate because it's in the CRM. You don't have to go to Plecto. You don't have to go to your spreadsheet on Google, right? So it makes the ability of taking complex data and reporting it out in a way that's meaningful. So those are my top three. I have a lot of other ones, but those are my big ones.
Yeah, let's see. Guys, please ask your questions. Zach wants to know why you're so awesome.
is that my husband, Zach?
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
So, friendly investors, how much
no
do
one
you
wants to know about, like, bicuspid aortic valves or anything like
no,
that?
No, not
I
this
guess
one.
Not. Okay.
Friendly investors wants to know, how much is your CRM and how can they use it?
Yeah. So it's a one-time $5,000 site licensing fee. So you get Enterprise Edition of Salesforce with LeftMain embedded in. That's the turnkey solution. No development needed. You do need to do your integrations. Like, if you have Facebook ads and you have, you know, CallRail, we do some integrations for you, or you can pick which ones you want. But that's the one-time fee. And then it's $50 a user a month.
Mm-hmm.
Which is huge. I don't even get that deal. I'm paying $150 a user because I'm doing, like, my normal Salesforce deal. But that's what it is. $50 a user a month after that initial fee.
And that's enterprise, meaning we can go back and modify however we want.
Anything you want to do.
So what if you're making changes to yours? Does that make changes to all of them?
So we do push upgrades, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm always cooking something. I'm barely scratching the surface of the stuff that I want to roll out. But when we have an upgrade, we announce to all of our clients, hey, this update's available. This is what's in it. Do you want it?
Mm-hmm.
And we let people opt in, so we don't force people to get it. And the reason for that is you may have done some custom work and you know, you maybe this is duplicative, or maybe it interferes with what you did. So if that's your scenario, you're like, oh, hey, I did this on this object. Is that going to affect it? We can test it first in your little sandbox and then push it to production. But you are in control of your org completely. So once you buy it, like, that is yours. We don't have any access to it unless you allow us to have access to it. So we always ask permission, and then you have to grant us access to push the update through.
So let's say I skip this update, but I like the following update. I have to accept the previous updates then?
Not necessarily. Then you have like a subset.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to take a lot of time.
It does, yeah. And now I have a whole team. Now it's not just me anymore.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you have a team behind you.
Now I do.
Managing all that.
Yep. I have a development team of 5. We have account managers. We have integration specialists. We have tier 1 support and tier 2 support.
Wow. Yeah. So you're an up and running, full blown SaaS.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's very cool. What is an example of a report that you would run to help a user make more money per month?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I love starting with quarterly marketing reports, and I also like to look at the time of your pipeline. Those are probably my favorite. Oh gosh, I have so many. I like that one, and I also like, we have a pipeline manager, so I can see what every rep is doing, like every click a rep does. I can see in all the records that they're managing, so I can look at my industry and my company, and see how many of my reps are in negotiation with homeowners. So I'll start with that one real quick because I've got so many. This is my favorite part. So if I can see the deals that my reps are negotiating with, those are my highest value items in the entire CRM. Those are people who we've made an offer to, right? And they haven't accepted it yet, but they also haven't told you to go pound sand, right? So of course, the ones that sign right away, beautiful, we get those, we monetize those. But what about the people we made an offer for that didn't accept right away? If those are, in my opinion, the highest value. So I want it to be super easy to pull that data out and monitor that. How long does it take each one of my rep to close that deal, right? If you don't get it on the first time, like, how long are you negotiating with people? And then it gives us an opportunity to lead them. How, like, what are the objections? What are the, how do we overcome this? What are the numbers? And I can pull them out. At any given time, there's probably 6 in my company that are being in negotiation at any given time. Not a lot, but I want to find that without scrolling through anything. I want to open up my CRM and see which ones are in negotiation right now, and then I can take action. And I can also predict with that information. So, you know, for example, our goal is to have 5 contracts a week. And we pretty often, most of the time we hit that. But if I'm midweek and I don't see numbers in my CRM that are telling me I'm going to hit my goal, I want to take some action against that. And that negotiation one tends to be a big one, because if I don't see active negotiations, I know there's not going to be a deal coming, you know. And then I can also see, hey, how many appointments are set just by opening it. So I can make predictions, which changes how you run, because you move away from just playing defense to now playing offense.
Right. It's the predictive abilities.
Yeah. If you can predict, then you can be like, oh, not on track, do something. Not a marathon pace, I got to do something different.
And you're monitoring this list of people, and you're coaching your team.
Yeah.
You don't have someone else whose sole job is to...
Oh, well, the acquisition department chair is the one who coaches, right? Like, every department has their coach, but we can pull it up and see it. So I probably spend 2 minutes a day reviewing my company.
Yeah. I'm asking this question because for me, we're strongly considering creating a role within our operation whose sole job is to look at deals that didn't close. Right? Like, opportunities.
QA, QI, yeah.
Yeah. Opportunity, didn't close.
Yeah.
And their job is to just call them, you know, apologize for, you know, not doing a good job.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, we screwed something up because we didn't buy your house.
Yeah.
And then bring it in to either bring across the finish line as a cash offer or a creative deal.
Oh, huge. That's a huge deal.
Or a listing opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So being able to change to offense is huge. And then marketing is the other thing that I feel like will make you more money by knowing those numbers. I can't even tell you like how much money we probably wasted. We used to spend $70,000 a month on marketing. Right? I'm spending about 25 now, and I'm doing literally triple the amount of deals I did when I was spending 70. And that's because we spent so much money, just burnt money because we sucked at managing leads. Like, when leads came in the system, we were like, what? I don't know. They didn't pick up the first time. So when you can track your marketing down to the minute with, like, how long did it take you to contact that lead, right? Did you even contact that person? and how long did it take you to convert it even to a qualified lead? You can look at that marketing metrics per lead source and per person. That helps you make a lot more money because now you're going to spend appropriately, mm-hmm. right? If you find that your marketing source, they don't pick up, that takes you 30 times to attempt the contact, takes you on average 1,500 minutes for them to pick up the phone, maybe you're going to spend more money on the people that, you know, bring you leads that pick up in 20 minutes, or the average time to contact is 20. And contact, I don't mean action. I mean like physical conversation. So we look at that, and we look at it across all the different stages of your of the lead, like the lead itself, the qualified lead, which you call opportunity, the appointment, and then the deal, and all the submetrics there, you know, like the time to contact and the contacted yes or no percentage, et cetera. So I guarantee if you start looking at your numbers like that, you'll make more money because you'll spend less.
Right. Oh, that's huge. And Darren Dammy says you guys are the gold standard, so that's huge.
Hey, Darren.
And then Ryan Williams demo. I posted a link here. It is an affiliate link, you know, full disclosure. But I posted a link there. You guys can schedule a demo there.
Oh, awesome.
So see, well, got a lot of comments up here. People love Salesforce. Rita Chorfee says the best thing was switching to Salesforce.
Oh, yay!
Is there a phone service? Do you use 360 SMS?
I do. I use 360. We actually recently brought them in house. So I've kind of, this is interesting. This did surprise me. Initially, I thought that people would be married to their phone system. Like, you know, like you go like hard into call rail and you have like 100 different numbers, and like the thought of transitioning that is scary. So initially, so Left Main, the $5,000 package, does not have a direct integration with a phone. You can bring your own vendor, choose whoever you want, and we will help you integrate it. But then, honestly, I kind of looked for a better option. We used CallRail before. We used Cloud Call before. And I really wanted a Salesforce native program that I could control. So we went with 360 SMS. They have a dialer, a text messaging platform, which does automations, drip campaigns, the whole deal, and RVMs, RVM automation too. And not RVM like cold RVM. RVM like, hey, I just saw you opened up your contract I sent you. Sometimes it's easier to go over it over the phone. Call me back. Like that kind of RVM drop. Yeah. Like we're talking next level, right? So they do all of that, and we were able to program it for my company. So then people started, you know, expressing interest in that, like, well, can I just have what you did? So then, I mean, I brought 360 in house. So now you can essentially buy that turnkey phone solution as alongside of Left Main if you want to. And then we deliver everything that's already pre-built on that phone side. You do have to decide if you want to port your numbers over or if you want to buy new. That's the only decision you have to make.
Got it. Cool.
Control what you can control is the bottom line, right?
That's the key. So we started, right? Zach had to drag you along. Maybe kicking and screaming, I don't know.
A little bit.
And you said that you're not a visionary, but you're leading all these different initiatives. So how do you align that?
Yeah. So I definitely have some drive. I will admit to that. And I have some ideas. But that's not primarily who I am, right? Like I need to get started. And I accredit Zach to a lot of that. I kind of saw his vision and what he wanted to do and where we wanted to go with this company. And then I got really inspired by other people trying to start businesses. That really where I started was how to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. So I didn't create the problem, but I will find a way to fix it. And that's kind of, I think, what my superpower is in the end, is like I eat problems for breakfast. So on those hard days, I have to tell myself that, like, I will fix that problem. I will find a way to fix it. And how I fix it is sometimes by developing these tools, right?
Right.
But I don't see that the same way as vision. I see that as like, I'm going to fix that problem. I'm done dealing with this problem.
Right. Well, and I think that's really on the real estate side why we get paid what we get paid.
Exactly.
We're solving major problems.
Yeah.
So you're doing over here, you're solving a problem. If you're the best at solving the problem, you get rewarded for it.
Exactly.
So going back to your market, what is your average fee right now?
15 to 17 wholesale fee.
I think, what's the RM do you like? what is your why? What is your passion?
My passion is impact. I want everything I do to make a difference on every single level with my family, in like showing my kids what they can do, showing my, you know, my future kids what they can, my future grandchildren what they can do. My patients, I want to impact their lives. I want to impact our industry. I want to help homeowners. I want to give back. Like, I want everything I do at every single level to have an impact on somebody else in a positive direction.
And what's your biggest struggle right now?
Time. There's just not enough. Like I said before.
It might be because of how many seats you're in.
I know. No more companies, I promise.
I made that promise before.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for real though this time.
You know what Gary said to me? What? Because he came in here in December and he kind of did this whole thing with my organization. Mm-hmm. And there was some frustration within my organization.
Yeah.
Right. Can you believe it? Like my people were unhappy.
What?
Yeah. And so what happened was I got all these different people running the companies and they're frustrated mm-hmm. with my managing. Right. And so like there has been kind of like an unspoken promise by Steve, like, hey, you're not allowed to do anything. Right. Just leave everything alone. Right.
Yeah.
Let's not go crazy. And Gary said, Steve, you can open as many companies as you want.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Like a kid in the candy. He's like, really?
Yeah.
And he said, as long as you have the right integrator.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was the that's the restraint.
Yep.
I need to find the right guy. If I can find the right guy.
Yep.
Or gal, that can do whatever, but I'm not allowed to start.
Until you have it. Yep.
Until I have that person.
It's so true.
Yeah. So you were saying you're not gonna start any more companies, or you're not gonna, or you're gonna have like a different situation where like you'll start a company if you find the right person, or you find another problem that you want to eat for breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess you should never say never. But I've learned a lot now, like how to launch and how to run. This is my third company to do that with. But I feel like I've hit my sweet spot mm-hmm. right now, and I don't foresee starting additional companies. I foresee running these.
I'm sure I can persuade you.
Well, mostly I'm trying to protect myself from my biggest weakness, which is that workhorse. Mm-hmm. Like I will work myself into a coma. Like my husband will tell you, like you have to like peel me off the street. Like I will work until that point. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I do that. But I just like get at an issue and I just won't stop. So I have to protect myself from what I decide to say yes to. So that's what comes back to time. Like I don't want to spend all my time building. I do want to get to a point where I'm like, I'm doing my high impact items, I'm raising my family, I'm traveling, I'm doing all the things I love to do at high impact levels. Like I'm going to work hard, we're going to play hard, right? But I want also to protect my time.
Is that with the strategist, is that the high A or the lower C that's that's causing that part where you won't quit until it's done?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it one or the other, or is it both?
I think it's probably both, because I'm really impatient. So I'm just like, we're just going to do it, right? Like, I'll just do it. I try to invent time all the time. Frank Cavo would tell you that. Yeah. That I try to invent time with him today. I'm like, there's an hour here. No, I cannot invent time. Even Einstein couldn't do that.
Right.
But yeah.
All right, so then this might be a silly question, is how do you stay motivated?
How do I stay motivated? I think I return to the why, like the impact, and I review the stuff that's helped, and I review the feedback I've gotten from clients. I review the what my kids say to me, what my family says to me now, and that keeps me motivated. I mean, I can pretty much get out of bed on the worst day when I go run my list. I'm like,
what are they saying that keeps you motivated?
The funny thing is like it's all like little things, and it's almost like embarrassing to say, but they're like, you did it. Mm-hmm. Like you can do, you did stuff. You can do stuff.
Words of affirmation.
Yeah.
I'm only asking this because usually when like words are the motivator, it's because someone said I couldn't do it. Right. But then you said friends and family. I was like, well, I'm hoping that Zach's not saying you couldn't do it. So
a lot of people said I couldn't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
And for like a lot of entrepreneurs, that's what motivates you.
Yeah.
But what's motivating you is the words of affirmation, words of support. Yes,
it is. It is the words of support. I mean, I think those are the things that you hear in your head and I try to replace those words with the things that discourage you in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And all your own self-doubt and all your own head trash. Like I have a ton of head trash, and I just try to like review that list and like I can do it. Like I can eat problems for breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, and that's stupid, but like, I just say that stuff to myself. Mm-hmm. Right. I just say those words and then I go for a run or something. I'm like, I can do it.
Yeah. It's not stupid at all. Right. You know what motivates you
and you
use it. Like I said, for me, it's all those people that said I couldn't do it. Right.
Yeah.
Like I still have a list.
You have like a hit list.
I have a list of everyone that said I couldn't do it. Right.
So, nice.
That's what motivates me.
Yeah.
What is the greatest lesson that you have learned?
Oh, man. Ooh, that's a hard one. this is kind of off topic, but I think the biggest lesson and the best lesson that I've ever learned is to align yourself with purpose and align yourself with God. And if you do that, and when I did that, I feel like everything changed. To start with that purpose. And I didn't do that for a very long time. I felt like I needed to be in control. Mm-hmm. I had the answer, right? I have to figure out the answer. I need to know what's going to happen 4 steps from now for me to be able to do anything. And that kind of attests to like the beginning of the story, all this fear I had to get started, all this stuff, right? And I realize I don't have to have all the answers. And I am not in control. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not driving the bus. I can be a participant on the bus, right? And I can do my best. But even if I do my best and it's not aligned with purpose or God's purpose, it's not going to work out. Like, yeah. I'm just going to spin my wheels and it's going to suck. So I've really tried to be in tune with that, be in tune with what my purpose is. And I feel like that's made such a huge difference. And it's also taken a lot of pressure off to have to know everything all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll figure it out. I'm not gonna. It won't happen right away. Sometimes you just gotta pray. Sometimes you just gotta wait, and it like things work out. You know what I mean? And that doesn't like I don't mean that to say like just lay down. Like God's got you. He'll send. You know the money will just get deposited in your bank.
Yeah, the secret.
Right. That's not true. But
right.
But that alignment is probably the biggest lesson I've ever learned. Not only for business, but for my marriage too.
Ben Begg wants to know if you could have coffee with someone dead or alive, who would it be?
Well, after that, I mean, I've got to say Jesus after that. I have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd drink coffee.
Maybe he would. Maybe he'd watch me drink mine.
What is your favorite, best, or most interesting failure?
The best or most interesting failure? Mm-hmm. Oh, God. my most interesting failure. I tried to play guitar, and I really sucked at that. What else did I really fail at? I feel like I fail all the time. I just don't stop and accomplish something with multiple failures. I don't know. I don't know that I can pick just one thing that I failed at. I failed at a lot.
Mm-hmm. Is there a book you've gifted more than any other?
Yes. Jim Collins, Good to Great. Mm-hmm. I've gifted that one. That's one of my favorites.
It's a phenomenal book.
Phenomenal.
Actually, made Ryan read it.
Oh, really?
You know what? You should actually, when you go talk to Ryan, you should let him know. Because I told him he needed to read Good to Great.
Yeah.
And then Built to Last.
Yeah.
Right? And his complaint to me was that they sound very much the same.
They're different, though.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
So you should get in his ear.
All right.
And let him know.
I'll underscore that. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to let you think about what you want to leave the listeners with. Guys, if you got value today, please like, subscribe, share, comment, tag somebody. The more people that know about this, the closer we are in achieving our mission. And actually, you guys should stay tuned in the next few weeks. We're going to be announcing something that I think everyone will enjoy. We're going to be enrolling the entire community into the 100 Millionaires Project. And then next week, we got Austin Rutherford coming in from Ohio. And then we have our workshop. It's going to be in 2 days. So for you procrastinators, people that might be like me, we have our workshop. It's going to be all day here in the classroom. And we're offering virtual option now. So if you guys are interested in that, send me a DM. We can enroll you in that.
That's awesome.
Last thoughts.
All right. Last thoughts. Start small and don't stop. Eat those problems for breakfast. Sometimes that problem is I can't get out of bed.
Yeah.
So like you eat that problem. I'm going to put my feet on the ground. Right? And you just start with that and you just keep going.
I love it. Build momentum.
That's right.
It's almost like that. What was that? That Navy. I think it was an admiral or whatever. It's like. His secret to success was making his bed every morning.
Yeah.
If someone wants to get a hold of you, how would they reach you?
You can find me on Facebook. You can go to my website. So Stephanie Betters is where I'm at on Facebook. And the website for Left Main is leftmainrei.co.
Yep.
You can find me there.
Awesome.
I'm there. I'm out there. Google me. No.
Yeah.
Facebook is a great way. I like Facebook.
Facebook's great.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you for watching. Thank you. This was an absolute pleasure.
Yay. Thanks for having me.
And nobody died. It was great.
Nobody died.